Victory or death!
Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Radio Free Virginia. I'm your host, Hank Rudin, the voice of freedom behind enemy lines here in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And this is episode 21-37, the 37th episode of 2021. And mainly today I'm going to be focusing on inflation, which is the hidden tax taking us all into poverty. I'll be sharing a clip from Tucker Carlson. I'll be talking about inflation and what it is. Before I get started on that, I'm going to share with you an article that explains, I think, why what's fueling a lot of this. Because, of course, money printing and stuff like that, which I'll talk about, is fueling inflation. But there's something bigger fueling this problem. Before I do that, I wanted to tell you, if you want to get the show notes, you can do that at radiofreevirginia.com. And please share that with your friends. I'm over on Gab, so you can get information and updates. Occasionally, I'll find some pretty good stuff over there. And I pretty much cut Facebook completely, mostly out of my life. I get on there, see if my mom has posted any new photos or memes that I should check out, and that's pretty much it. I'm off maybe once a week. I'm on there. I'm just not on there. It's not worth my time. Not for what they're doing and how much they hate us patriots. So, but what really helps the show out is if you will follow the show or subscribe to the show, whatever they're calling it, on whatever podcast platform you're using, whether it's Apple or Spotify or Stitcher or Podbean, which is where I upload the show. That helps get the word out. It helps see that this thing is popular. And what that also does is it automatically lets you know. And depending on your settings, it might automatically download the show. And that right there, that one thing, just setting it to automatically download is huge, because that is what we track. If people have downloaded the show, that is a good thing. And I can go and expand the show and talk about just the fact that the show is growing based on that data. Without that, I don't know who's listening and whatnot, because unless you are listening, click play and it wasn't downloaded, then it starts downloading as it's playing. So then that counts as a download, but the other way works too. So do that for me. Like to thank the show sponsor, Acticare of the Blue Ridge, ACTIKARE.com/Blue-Ridge. If you're looking for in-home senior care for your senior loved one in the Appomattox, Bedford, Campbell, Roanoke, out in the country, get in touch with them and they'll take good care of you. ACTIKARE.com/Blue-Ridge. And this article is from Newsmax by Lauren Fix. And this was posted on the 22nd of October, so just a couple days ago. The chip shortage, auto parts shortage, and California shipping port congestion is all part of the same supply chain issue. This is a nightmare that will not end soon. As this nightmare at the California port continues to persist, Governor Gavin Newsom issued an executive order on October 20th, intended to alleviate the crisis that actually makes the problem worse. The executive order aims to find state-owned land and various other areas to temporarily store goods once they are removed from the port. It also removes weight limits on trucking freight routes to transport more goods. On Wednesday, President Bumbles said that the Los Angeles and Long Beach ports in California would be required to stay open 24/7 to fight the growing supply chain problems experienced throughout the country. So far, it's not working. Well, yeah, it's not working because nobody listens to Bumbles, for one. Two, the unions are the only people, apparently, that don't have to enforce presidential edicts. So they're not doing what they're being told. Of course, most of the seaports in the United States are manned by the International Longshoremen Association on the East Coast and the International Long shore, and warehouse union on the West Coast. Further, U.S. ports, heavily reliant on union labor, are not as automated as they are overseas. A micro-macro problem. None of this is going to resolve the problem, which is much deeper than California's ports being backlogged. Supply chain issue is a critical part of our local, state, and national economies. It will affect every aspect of our lives. How and why is this happening? I'll explain. Let's take a closer look. As of today, there are over 160 ships waiting to dock and unload at the port. There are 106 ships offloading as of this report. That's a lot. I mean, that essentially means in the region there's 266 ships. The Longshoremen's Union offloads the ships and loads them onto the proper trucks. This is where the slowdown happens. The Longshoremen Union doesn't want to work 24 hours a day, even though the White House stated otherwise. There needs to be updates to the automation, which would make this job more efficient. There is a shortage of trucks. Well, why is this? Last year, legislators in the state of California passed Assembly Bill 5 in an effort to protect workers who previously had been unfairly labeled as independent contractors. AB 5, commonly referred to as the Gig Worker Bill, requires employers to reclassify these independent contractors as employees and treat them as such. The Port of Los Angeles and Long Beach is the entrance point for 40% of all containers coming to the United States. So I'm going to come back to that in a sec. Many truckers are employed as independent contractors, and AB 5 only allows union truckers to pick up at the ports. So owner-operators who own their own trucks cannot pick up at the ports, and this is a huge part of the issue. According to the lawsuit against the state, many workers have been forced to drastically change the way they do business, and others have lost their jobs due to the changes in the law. Most motor carriers don't own trucks or employ drivers. Rather, they work with owner-operator truck drivers. These drivers have traditionally been hired as independent contractors. The majority of the work done by the carrying company is transporting goods. The state is blocking these drivers from working. AB 5 could also complicate trucking that crosses state lines. Motor carriers would be forced to reconfigure routes or work with owner-operators to transfer their shipments to trucking companies who employ drivers. This whole process could be quite costly for the carriers and the owner-operators, which means you pay more for your goods, whether it's automotive, food, and everything else. Here's a result of less truck drivers. Containers sit for 7 to 8 weeks. Instead of days, and that equals a 22-week delay of chip shortage to the car manufacturers and other goods you use daily. There's a huge part of why stuff's not moving. What she just wrote right there. Let me read it again. There are 7 to 8 weeks that these containers are sitting here. Instead of days, and that equals 22 weeks delay of chip shortage to the car manufacturers and other goods you use daily. 22 weeks delay. And a 7 to 8 week average time that those things are sitting at the port. And that's why there are 160 ships sitting off of the coast. The result of the delay is surging inflation and the cost of everything, including cars, increasing as the supply shortage continues. There is no sign of subsiding. There's no sign of subsiding in the near future. Somebody needs a proofreader because some of the wording of this is a little off. The new issue to add to this mess is that containers have filled the ports, and some companies are dropping these large metal containers on local residential streets. The terminals in LA can't bring any ships in because there's no room to put any containers on the ground. Most are empty. I have one solution for them. Empty containers can be reused to build housing. To add gasoline to the fire, there is a labor shortage to load and unload the trucks. And as the backlog doubles, the supply chain is impacted. Look at food stores, auto parts, and literally everything we need and want. Here's the bottom line. California needs to lessen its restrictions, because enforcing AB 5 throws the nation's supply chain into further chaos, and the impact to the economy is massive and causes economic scarcity. The chips and components are stuck on these ships, as well as repair and replacement parts for your vehicles. This supply chain issue is the result of too much control, too many regulations, and too much government. Here's another solution. Buy what's made in our country. Buy local and small business when you can. Well, the problem is that local small business is usually buying this stuff from here. All right, I want to circle back to the 40% problem. The 40% of our goods are going through those ports, okay? The San Diego, Southern California ports, San Diego's and Los Angeles. And I would imagine that some similar problems are being faced with the ports that are in Mexico that stuff comes into, because then you have to have these drivers coming up from Mexico, and probably a lot of the same issues that they're running into there. So 40% doesn't mean that, oh, it's just a handful of goods. It's 40% of the goods. It might be 40% of the parts your business needs to complete a finished item. Now let's look at the business I'm in, access control and security cameras. We put in these big panels. They're 2 feet by 3 feet high, 2 feet wide by 3 feet high, and they've got a bunch of electronic components in them. Well, various parts are made in various places, mostly over in China, Singapore, Vietnam, Taiwan, those places. But then a lot of them are assembled here in the United States. And if you're missing 40% of the parts to complete your item, your factory goes idle. Your workforce is laid off. Or the fancy word for that is furloughed. And that creates economic problems, because now where that creates inflation is the say 100 panels that are in the system out there at various suppliers. Well, now there's a supply and demand issue here. Because where there should be 200, 300, 400 of those panels, now there's only 100. But we need, let's say, 300 in the market out there. Well, now those 100 panels are now worth 2-3 times as much as they were before, maybe more. So what happens is the people immediately realize this. People in our business realize this, and they go, "Uh-oh, we need these for the next 3 months of jobs. So buy them all." How many are out there? We need 10. Buy 20. So that immediately cuts the supply, because it's not a matter of hoarding. It's just a matter of future forecasting your job. Let's look at another item. These boards that control the doors. The boards, we were just informed, have gone up 40%. 40% in price overnight. And on top of that, it's very likely that because of the chip shortage issue, the shipping and everything else, a lot of these are coming from foreign countries. Not only are they going to be 40%, and that's from the manufacturer, but then you have the guy in the middle and lots of other things. And so our company went and bought a whole bunch of these things, because we use these all the time. And we can't, when a job finally is coming to the point where we can get close to finishing it, or we actually show up, do it, get it completed, and bill, well, now we can't finish it because we don't have all the parts. Or as bad is that now all those parts are way up in price, and it blows the whole scope of work out, and we can't charge more because this is the bid. Let's say it's $50,000 for a big project. Well, that's the bid. That's what we're going to charge them. We can't go, "Hey, now things cost more, so you have to pay more." Doesn't work like that. That's the whole point of a bid. So that's just one industry. So this 40% number, it's not so cut and dry. It's not so simple. Maybe the cases are coming from Sweden. Who knows? But the circuit boards, the power supplies, the relays, they're all coming from various Asian countries. So a huge chunk of what's needed, even if it was 10%, what if it was just 10%? Well, 10% of that panel isn't complete, can't be finished, can't be shipped, isn't available for us to purchase. And that is true of cameras, camera mounts, camera arms, everything. Ultimately, this problem is exactly what the Interstate Commerce Clause of the United States Constitution was designed to prevent from happening, where another state should not be able to bottleneck or affect the commerce of all the states. And that is exactly what California is doing, or not is doing, has done. And because we've got this communist regime and communist regime in California. This isn't going to change anytime soon. So now you know what's causing the part of the problem that we face. Some of the increase in goods and whatnot isn't just caused by printing money. Now we'll talk about inflation. But before we talk about inflation, I'm going to share this clip from Tucker Carlson.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. Happy Tuesday. There's probably no institution in American life that has more effect on how you live, but that we talk about less than the Federal Reserve. People don't care to talk about the Federal Reserve because it seems very complex, and a lot of what it does is in fact complex. Unless you have a grounding in monetary policy, it's hard to know exactly what's going on. But the basics aren't that complicated, actually, and here are a few of them. The Federal Reserve was created way back in 1913 by an act of Congress, and it had really two main goals: maximize employment and keep prices stable, keep inflation under control. Those are virtuous goals. But it may be a measure of the way that bureaucracies work that over time, the Federal Reserve has actively undermined both of those objectives. It's the classic story of the fireman turned arsonist, or for that matter, the COVID czar who helped create COVID. Irony of irony. It seems like we read a lot of those lately. In the case of the Federal Reserve, consider something called quantitative easing. That's the main thing the Fed has been doing since the financial crisis of 2008. Every month, Federal Reserve officials print more than $100 billion new dollars in American currency, and then they inject those dollars into our financial system by buying assets like bonds and securities. This is not a normal thing to do. It's a radical thing to do, and it was supposed to be temporary. It was in response to a crisis. In medical terms, quantitative easing is like chemotherapy. There are times when it can save your life, but fundamentally, it's poison. If you keep taking it, it will kill you. Pretty much everyone agrees on that. And pretty much everyone understands that ultimately, quantitative easing causes horrible inflation. And it's easy to understand why. You don't need to be an expert. The more money you print, the less that money is worth. It's supply and demand. You buy diamonds by the carat, but you buy dirt by the yard. Overabundance decreases value. So every new dollar you print buys less. If you keep printing them, you wind up devaluing your own currency. That's one thing a responsible government should never do. It may enrich banks and a tiny number of big investors who give to the Democratic Party, but devaluing your currency screws everyone who works and who saves. And that's immoral. Those are exactly the people that a legitimate government ought to be trying to help as its core mission. And yet they're not. All these years later, quantitative easing continues. They're still doing it. On Wall Street, they joke about how it's going to go on forever. They call it QE infinity. It's an incredibly reckless policy, and everybody knows it, very much including the people who are getting rich from it. So for the better part of a year, Fed officials have been promising they're going to stop doing this. They have sworn they will get sober. They have vowed to begin a process called tapering. That means they'll start to gradually slow the money they print. At a Fed meeting in April, officials said they'd start to do this very soon. They would taper, but they never did. They made the same promise throughout this summer, but again, they didn't. The binge continued. This morning, the vice chairman of the Fed, Richard Clarida, once again insisted that tapering is almost here. We're about to do it. The conditions to begin detox, he said, have all but been met. And yet, as of tonight, the Fed is still partying with your currency like this is the richest country in the world and always will be. So what are the effects on our country of this? Well, in the short term, as with vodka, it makes everybody feel pretty good. It's 3 a.m., your lips are numb, and you can barely see, and yet somehow, the breakfast meeting downtown you've got in 5 hours, the one where you're going to have to give a detailed presentation to your boss, seems like no problem at all. You've got this. Except you don't have it at all. Morning always comes. It is always worse than you think. America's quantitative easing hangover is going to be ugly. Beneath the manufactured euphoria of our top-line economic numbers, Google's killing it! Record profits for Amazon, says CNBC. Beneath all of that garbage, the actual American economy is in trouble, and there are many signs of it. Labor markets are tight right now because a lot of Americans have simply dropped out of the labor force. 4.3 million people walked off the job last month. Some of them were forced out by Joe Biden's vaccine mandates. Projections for GDP growth just dropped from 6% to 1.5%. Small businesses across the country are dying. And maybe most ominous of all, inflation is here. It's not just a temporary problem caused by COVID-disrupted supply chains. It is absolutely real.
The American economy starting to sizzle once again as it emerges from the pandemic. And workers' paychecks are too, with businesses practically begging for help. But there's a flip side to all the raises, and that's inflation. Prices rising at the fastest rate since 2008. Everything from washing machines up almost 30% to furniture up 11% and television sets up 8%.
So it's happening throughout the economy. It's not just washing machines and television sets, consumer electronics. It's everything, including the big things. Try to buy a house. It's now more expensive to buy a home than it has ever been at any time in American history. The median existing home price last year was $310,000. It's now over $356,000 and a lot more in the zip codes you might want to live in. Part of the reason is the cost of building materials. They're completely out of control. Last October, lumber went for about $580 per 1,000 board feet. As of last week, it was 712. Last August, used cars, which you might need, were selling for an average price of 21,000. This August, a year later, they were almost 28,000. Same car, $7,000 more. Over the same period, by the way, as you well know, the price of gas jumped a full dollar a gallon, and a lot more than that in some places. But in the grocery lately, the cost of a pound of steak is up by $2. A pound of bacon costs over $7 right now. And suddenly everything costs more. Eggs, milk, coffee, mustard, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. These are not luxury items. This is not a trip to St. Bart's. These are things you buy every week and you have to buy. The question is, are your wages rising as fast as your costs? Well, let's see. Vegetable oil is up 60%, so probably not. And that means you're getting poorer, whether you realize it or not. But that's what inflation does. It causes poverty. So because we can prove that the population of the United States is getting poorer by the day, you'd think the Biden administration would be actively concerned about this and working to make it better. But they're doing the opposite. They're actively making it much worse. And here's how they're doing it: by spending. No government in the history of the world has ever spent more money than Joe Biden is spending right now. That is a fact. In fiscal year 2019, just the other day, the entire federal government spent $6.6 trillion. Then COVID hit the following year, and those numbers went up. They went up by 40%. Federal spending in 2020 jumped to $9.1 trillion. Was that too much? Of course it was. What do we get for it? Not enough. But here's the shocking thing. Under Joe Biden, as COVID recedes, it's going up even higher because they're no longer using COVID as a pretext. Through the end of this August, which is to say a month and a half ago, the federal government has already spent more in 2021 than it did over the entire calendar years of 2019 and 2018. So all of this drives inflation to scary levels. But they're not scary to everyone. If you're a massively leveraged financial institution that owes a lot of money to a lot of people, and that's how you're making your money, this is not necessarily bad news. If money is worth less, that means that your debt service costs less. You don't fear inflation. Inflation helps you. The problem is it crushes the American middle class. Now, in a normal country, this would be a huge concern. But because the people who make our policy don't care about the middle class, this is a bargain well worth making. Bloomberg News just published a piece with this headline, which we're not making up. They're celebrating the disaster. Quote, "America needs higher, longer lasting inflation." If you can even imagine writing something like this, does America need more emphysema too? It's grotesque. Now, most people may not know this is happening. Normal people don't read Bloomberg News. They may be unaware that these attitudes even exist in what they assumed was their country. And the Biden administration would like to keep it that way, would like to keep the population from finding out what's happening. So here's the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen. She's the reptile who once ran the Federal Reserve and is therefore more responsible than any single living person for your growing poverty. Here she is assuring you that $7 bacon isn't actually a problem. That's not really inflation. It's something called transitory inflation.
I don't believe that we're at risk of hyperinflation. We've had several months of high inflation that most economists, including me, believe will be transitory as our economy gets back in full swing after the pandemic.
It's just transitory. It's the price of progress, $7 bacon. Yeah, but look what you're getting in return. Aren't things great? Until just a few hours ago, that was the official line in Washington, along with those Southwest delays were caused by weather. And our withdrawal from Afghanistan was actually a huge success. What are you talking about? That's what they were telling us. And then the president of the Atlanta Fed, a man called Raphael Bostic, admitted what was very obvious to anyone who goes to the grocery store. This actually is inflation. It is real inflation. It is not transitory inflation. And it's going to be here for a long time. What he didn't say was that this is not an act of God. This isn't a hurricane. It's not an earthquake. It's not something we can't control. This is the result of decades of policy that have enriched a few and impoverished the many. When will the reckoning be for that? And what are the effects for you going forward?
Okay, I made some notes as he was talking here. And it's why I've chosen to title this Inflation Causes Poverty, because it's what he said, and it's true. Let's just talk some numbers here. Washer and dryers, 30% increase. Let's say that costs you $1,000 for a new washer and dryer. Well, that's $300 more, so $1,300. Is what it's going to cost you this year versus last year. Furniture, let's say you bought $1,000 in furniture, 11%, that's $110 more dollars on top of the $1,000 that it's going to cost you. TV, let's say you bought a $400 TV at about 8% inflation rate on the TV, that'd be about $40 more for those, for that TV, for $440. Gas is one we all can't run from. And I did some math a while back on what it's going to cost my company based on the gas that I was putting in on a regular basis. But on a personal level, what's it going to cost me? Well, let's say that my family uses 100 gallons of gas for a nice round number. It's going to cost me, because now gas was $2 under Trump. Now it's actually a little bit less. But let's say it's a nice round number. $2 under Trump, $3.30 today is what I paid for regular unleaded, not what I should be putting in my car. $130 more a month that's going to cost. So what they're saying is the general ballpark number they're saying, because if you equal all these things out, which this number is totally bogus, they're saying that inflation could reach 6% this year. It's a bogus number, but let's go with it, okay? Let's just say, okay, 6%, sure, liars, but let's go with that number. Let's say my family makes $100,000. Well, I've just lost $6,000 of my family's purchasing power this year because of that, 6%. So $6,000 more, everything's costing me. I didn't make $6,000 more, making the same I made this year as I did last year. I wish I was making $100,000, but it's a nice round number for you to think about. What about $3,000? Let's say you make $50,000. Can you afford $3,000 more increase when you haven't received a raise, when nothing more is coming in for you? I mean, are you getting more money? Did you get a raise this year? Most people didn't get a raise this year, and they sure as heck didn't get a 6% raise. And what you would need to cover that 6% if you really wanted to actually have a raise is a 12% raise. But really, the real inflation number is probably more at this point, with the way things are shooting through the roof, with the port issues I talked about. Real inflation is probably in the ballpark of 10 to 20%. So that means $10,000 to $20,000 more everything is costing you. So essentially, chisel that right off the top of everything you make. And on top of that, the government is coming knocking on your door for not only money, but more money. Hey, we want more. Can I have some more money? Hey, this is your Uncle Sam here. I'm doing such a bang up job here of keeping you safe and all, you know, with this, you know, non-declared wars everywhere and, you know, bringing lots of illegals into the country, doing such a, just a bang up job, not doing a piss poor job, bang up job. So you should give me more money, right? Oh, look, I know your money's worth less, but that's why you should give me more. What a ludicrous idea. And it wasn't until a couple months back, probably about 6 weeks ago, sitting down with my wife at the table, we were having a discussion and it clicked in my head, because I'd been trying to figure out, when we look at, we don't really do a budget. We're very fortunate that we make enough money. We don't spend outside of our means. But I'm like, I don't understand. It seems to me more often lately that you're sending me a text message that says, hey, by the way, we only have $900 left in the account, which and I know some of you would be like, well, I wish I had $900 in my account. But that's actually, you know, when you look at the fact that you got to pay bill, we got to pay bills, you got to pay the power bill, the water bill, and all these things, with that $900, there's really not much left. And that's what she's trying to communicate to me. Hey, we're almost out of money. Don't spend any money. Why are we almost out of money? We make good money. We're not spending more than we spent last year. Where's our money going? Well, this is where it's going. The government would say it's going in 6% interest rate. Yeah. But that's where it's gone. It's your purchasing power has been reduced and you didn't really see it. You see it in the store. It's called shrinkflation. Shrinkflation is when the box hasn't changed size. Or maybe it has. That's what they call it. I should call it shrinkflation. But some, one way or another, either the box hasn't changed size, or what's in the box has shrunk in the amount that is in the box. The bottles, little bottles of Gatorade, they've gotten smaller. Price hadn't changed. That's shrinkflation, because the price actually has gone up if you were to look at it by the ounce. And so then we also have stagflation. Stagflation is, you're hearing that term a lot. That's a stagnating economy with inflation, which is exactly what we have right now, by the way. So we have stagnating economy because of items that aren't reaching where they should be so that they can be installed and people can be working. And those people working can buy things probably that they don't need, like ATVs and boats and things, what, you know, whatever. Hey, but that's stagflation. And combine stagnation with inflation. That's a bad thing. It's Jimmy Carter days. Lines around the block for fuel and stuff like that. Fuel shortages and food shortages and whatever shortages. Because we live in this wonderful global economy. At least back in the 70s, we made stuff from start to finish here in the United States. Even when we make stuff now, we don't make stuff here. So inflation is a thing that is causing us all. It's taxing us in the background. We don't see it, but we feel it, and we know it's there. So pay attention to that. Ammo. Is ammo the same price? No, it's not. What about availability? Not there. Still. Well, this causes inflation. The price inflates. Now, that's a supply and demand thing. But, you know, if your dollar's worth less and it doesn't purchase as much, well, you also got that to look forward to. I like the last line that he said. I'm going to replay it right here.
This is the result of decades of policy that have enriched a few and impoverished the many. When will the reckoning be for that? And what are the effects for you going forward?
Yes, friends, when will the reckoning be? These people, these global elites, pulling the levers of power, doing it, whatever it is that they do. When will the reckoning be for them? I don't know. I guess vote more Republican, maybe. So think about that. Think about inflation. Think about what you're going to do to counteract that. You're going to go to your employer and you're going to say, hey, I want a 10% raise. I want a 12% raise. You're going to say, what? But, you know, give it a shot. You might look at cryptocurrency. You can get a 12 to 1,000% return on your investment. And you're risking some stuff, but just something worth looking at. I'm supposed to say this isn't financial advice, but that's stupid. Obviously, I'm not a financial advisor. but look at alternatives, because sticking your money in the bank sure isn't doing any good. Reckoning. I wish there was going to be a reckoning. And what is transitory inflation? Transitory inflation, that is us transitioning out of this time of difficult times and pandemic. And in that transition, there'll be some inflation. It's just transitory. We're going to transition out of that inflation. Well, you know what? That might be somewhat true. Granted, they are printing a lot of money. But let's set that aside. Let's set that issue aside for a minute. Were the ports actually functioning and delivering the parts and the supplies and the things and the junk we don't need to Walmart? Were that happening and we were not experiencing the other side of inflation, which is the supply and demand artificial side that's being created by this situation. Maybe that inflation would be transitory, but that's not what we have right now. This isn't going away anytime soon. Look for and be ready for some serious civil unrest, war, alien invasion. I mean, I don't believe in aliens, but you know, I mean, who knows? Whatever. I mean, look for something, because they got to find a way out of this mess. And usually that's chaos is usually the MO of these people. I want to share with you this outstanding advertisement free of charge to the Youngkin campaign, because it is real good stuff. So take a listen.
I'm Glenn Youngkin, candidate for governor, and I sponsored this ad.
Thanks for your vote, ma'am, but I'm here for that money you owe.
What?
If elected, Terry McAuliffe's plan could cost the average Virginia family $5,400 in new taxes.
Will that be cash or card?
I didn't vote for this.
Yes, you did.
Sorry. Terry's tax collection agency.
Somebody's got $5,400.
I'm sorry, sir, but somebody's got to pay for the biggest tax increase in Virginia history.
Virginia simply can't afford Terry McAuliffe.
Now that's what I'm talking about. Hitting them back. That's great. Good stuff. And I hope you're ready. I hope you're ready to watch them try and steal this election like they always do. It's going to be harder because Terry McAuliffe is essentially running around the state, thumping his chest, acting like the heir apparent and typical arrogant apparent with these people, and doing the shady, scummy, slimy things that guys like him do. And Glenn Youngkin is running an actual campaign, you know, doing stuff. I finally unsubscribed from his emails because they're getting really annoying. Oh, give me money, give me money, give me money. So I understand that they need money. You got to pay for these ads and whatnot, but come on. So this is one of the first times in a long time I'm actually looking forward to voting. I really like Jason Miaris. I don't know a lot about Winsome Sears, but what I have researched and looked at, I like. Glenn Youngkin, I'll take him at this point. And so I'm hopeful that if we can keep them from cheating, and there's a lot of movement here to prevent that from happening this year, a lot of poll watching and stuff like that movement taking place. So that would be great if we can avoid the cheating. It would be a good thing. Well, I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up here. I'd like to thank you for listening and remind you, you were not made to fit in. You were born to stand out. I'm Hank Reardon. This is Radio Free Virginia. God bless you.